If you're looking for the perfect gift, you're covered with a gift that's sure to wow. Taste of Chicago ships Lou Malnati's legendary deep dish pizzas nationwide. Plus, they ship other Windy City favorites too. Visit tastesofchicago.com to order today.
Terry Savage, the syndicated financial columnist at terrysavage.com. Hi, Terry.
Hi, John.
Markets are, just give me a quick update today.
Yeah, well, we're really close to the all-time highs. We spent this whole year having great discussions about recessions and what was going to happen in the economy and inflation and what the Fed was going to do. And we're 250 points, which is like a smidgen at these levels, away from all-time market highs, which validates, even though we may, who knows what will happen next, you know that long-run view that you take, that over the long run, at least 20 years, you have to have money in the stock market if you have that 20-year time horizon. Not all of it, maybe, depending on your stage in life. But so far, even the latest go-round of horrendous things that started with the pandemic and went through, you know, a lot of contested political issues, we're still close to all-time highs. Hello, America.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm reading online from one of the financial websites. The market got a boost after data showed, or do you say data, a drop in labor costs boded positively for the path of inflation. Boy, every show talks about inflation. What's your thought about that?
My thought is that maybe they're doing it. There are a lot of different measures of inflation, but by all of them, we are at the 2.5 to 3% level. It's not what the Fed wanted, 2%. But among, I know if you take out food and energy, it's this. And there are several different measures. But basically, we seem to have stopped the advance of inflation. Now, that doesn't mean, and I know I heard all of you growling out there. Yes, your grocery bill today seems to be twice as high as it was 5 or 6 years ago. Everything costs more. I didn't say the prices were coming down. We're talking about slowing inflation down to 2%. Right. Means it just doesn't go up so dramatically, but we're still at a very high level.
But to the degree that that drives consumer confidence or politics or discussions, I just wonder, do prices ever go down? Is there ever a 10-year period?
Yeah, in a depression. Well, yeah.
Right, fair enough. But I mean, in a healthy economy, prices go up. So if, say, pre-pandemic, you say, wow, eggs used to cost $1.89 and now they're $2.59. That's called
$4.
That's called inflation. Eggs is a bad example. You get my point.
Yeah.
That, yes, cumulatively, things cost a lot more than they used to, but they would have anyway. So I.
It's the rate of increase, and it's the sense that there's some control of the increase. You remember then, but it must be five, six years ago now, when interest rates in Europe went negative and people yep. were fearing the economy and you paid the banks to take your money and keep it safe. Yeah. And we got very close. We had treasury bills down to like 0.11%. And there was a fear that there would be a black hole into which economies would fall. Initially, it was because of the pandemic. And then, of course, they created money everywhere to stop that from happening. So, yeah, we don't want prices falling dramatically, but we want incomes to keep up with price increases. A lot of people would like incomes to outpace price increases. And we want to make sure that we don't have the sense that it's out of control. And a year ago, when we had double-digit inflation,
yeah.
there was really a sense that, hey, this is getting out of control.
All right, Terry, anything else? Oh, talk to me about what Jamie Dimon said, by the way.
Okay, let me make this brief. Jamie Dimon went on a rant today in front of Congress about Bitcoin, which, as many people have noted, has now risen to a level not seen since a couple of years ago, just under 44,000, and gold up too. And part of the reason for that is, well, if the Fed's done raising interest rates, you know, when you have money in gold or even in Bitcoin, you don't earn anything on it. If interest rates are coming down, maybe it's time to speculate on those things because it doesn't cost you as much. For our T-bill people, the rates now dropped on the 6 month from over 5.5 to under 5.4%. When your CD or T-bill renews in a few months, it'll certainly be lower than what you got it for. So with interest rates coming down, there's been renewed speculative interest. Jamie Dimon said, if I were the government, I'd close it down. It's used by terrorists, drug traffickers, criminals, tax avoidance. We need anti-money laundering laws. You know, the secrecy of Bitcoin is a big appeal of it, but it's interesting to see him talk about.
Well, but does he have
that? But it's not the blockchain. I shouldn't even say this without making a distinction between Bitcoin itself, which is what Jamie Dimon described it, if you want to believe that, and the actual concept of the blockchain, the immutable chain which tracks transactions, which, as happens, Chase is heavily invested in, and the banking community is. It's just the difference between paper and digital currency. But eventually, I bet most bankers want the dollar to be digital. It'll just save so much, literally, paperwork and costs, but not an alternative currency like Bitcoin, which uses the blockchain.
What would it mean? What would happen in my world if the dollar was digital? What does that mean?
It is digital. The restaurant down on the lobby, I wanted to get a cup of coffee. I'm sorry, we don't take cash. I mean, just had money. I want to actually have some money to tip the guy in the garage. But no, I'm sorry, you have to put your card on there, and you don't even slide it in there. You just tap it on there.
Yeah.
We're mostly digital anyway.
I wonder if we'll ever get away then from paper or coin currency completely.
Well, we haven't in 2,000 years. So
we haven't had electricity for 2,000 years either.
You don't
think in my lifetime that's going to happen, Terry, that they'll stop printing $20 bills?
I mean, not in our lifetimes, but somewhere down the road, yeah, probably.
312-981-7200 if you have a question for Terry. Terry, people still have questions about Medicaid, Medicare, and those plans.
I'm going to give you 1 minute on this because tomorrow's the last day. There are some good Medicare Advantage plans. Those plans typically are negotiated by unions or corporations who grant those as supplements to their retirees. The calls you've been getting on my way in this morning, I answered a call because it was from Tennessee and I have some friends there. Hello, this is Evan from the Medicare, da 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 da. Oh, do I hang up on them? Do I blow a whistle in their ears? I'm on the list, of course, and so are many of you. If you haven't already made a decision, you want to stick with your Medicare, traditional Medicare, if you can afford it, and your supplement. If you have 24 hours to change your mind, if you got into Medicare Advantage, the concern is that down the road, the plans they're hawking you over the phone will be restrictive of care and access because they're run not by doctors, but by artificial intelligence, which is trying to make a profit. Unlike Medicare, which is going broke, not making a profit.
You ready for some questions?
Absolutely.
These are text messages to start. 312 said, "Hi, Terry, can you please tell me a good place to save money for my 20-year-old college student for a nice down payment for a home in 5 years?
Well, when your college student goes to work, you can have you can contribute to a Roth IRA if your student, he or she, has earned income and maybe their first job is only paying $20,000 or something like that. But if they'll put away $500, you could have a 2-to-1 match and open a Roth IRA at Fidelity or Vanguard, cheap, and put it in the stock market. Or right now, you could just open a money market deposit account at the bank. That won't create any incentive. Or maybe you can open an account at Acorns. As long as you're not applying for financial aid, money in a child's name, that age won't impact you. So Acorns is a place where you can buy stocks for a child, a 20-year-old.
But if I'm contributing to a Roth IRA, what is the money invested in?
No. So the Roth IRA, let's say your 20-year-old's graduating and you want to start him or her off on a good thing.
Yep.
The child should go to Vanguard or Fidelity and say, I'm going to put $500 in. Actually, you're going to match that $500. So now it's $1,000 to open a Roth IRA and buy the Standard & Poor 500 stock index fund and keep contributing as long as the student has earned income.
And as long as they have income, say they only made $5,000 last year.
If you're going to support them and they made $5,000 in earned income, then $5,000 can go into a Roth. Okay, but it's not your earnings.
Right.
It's your money, but the child has to have earnings. You have to contribute to a Roth out of earned income.
I guess what I'm wondering, is there a threshold? Is there an amount of money they need to have earned for me to open up?
No. But, you know, your kid's living at home, living in the basement. You're not charging him rent, and he's got a starter job. And you say, Billy, if you'll save $500, I'll match it. and we'll put $1,000 in a Roth IRA for you if he's going to earn $1,000.
What if the child's name is not Billy? Then do you still?
Then it's Susie.
Okay. Is now a good time to start laddering TIPS, Treasury, inflated protected securities as part of a diversified portfolio? I'm retired, age 63.
This is a very complex question that I can't answer the speed round here, but you want to do that if you are only inside an IRA account where the tax consequences don't matter. Treasury inflation protected securities are a way to protect yourself against inflation, but also a side bet that interest rates will come down, and it looks like that's starting to happen.
John, could you have Terry mention the name her Social Security recommended help person?
Oh, yeah. MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com. That's Larry Kotlikoff's website that will show you what you should be getting. And it costs $39, well worth it. MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com. Update on the Social Security horror stories. We're working on this. We're in touch with the Congressional Committee, the Subcommittee on Social Security. We have not given up. Go to SocialSecurityHorrorStories.com. Post your story. I'm a little behind in approving the posts. I've been traveling. But we are trying to gain a lot of attention in Congress, not to fix the whole Social Security thing. That's going to be a topic at tonight's debate, I hear. But just to stop Social Security bullying people and clawing back money on dubious grounds for people who can't afford it and terrorizing seniors and disabled. SocialSecurityHorrorStories.com. Post your story there. We'll get them all up.
That debate is tonight, and then tomorrow night at the Black Ensemble Theater, Chicago Innovation is going to honor you.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been involved with them for a while. I think they called this the Oldies but Goodies Award. I'm delighted to be honored, and you contact the Black Ensemble Theater if you want to come. I have no idea what the program is, but I will be there, and I have a minute and a half to accept the award.
Starts at 5 o'clock. And what is Chicago Innovation, Terry?
Oh, Chicago Innovation. You've had Tom Kuzmarski on. This is the group that sponsors innovation events ranging from high school students and college students to helping entrepreneurs. For years now, they've given the entrepreneurial awards out. 88% of those companies have gone on to be profitable. A number of them have been acquired for big money. It's ChicagoInnovation.com. Tom Kuzmarski and Luke Tannen. And my former editor at the Sun-Times, Dan Miller, was one of the founders. It's part of what gives us hope that Chicago will continue to be a leading part of the global business community.
What a deserving award for Terry Savage, the syndicated financial columnist and the author now of Social Security Horror Stories, Protect Yourself from the System and Avoid Clawbacks. Her website's terrysavage.com. Congratulations, Terry. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, John.
Joining us now, Jay Notes, president of Working Nation, a regular guest on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Happy holidays, Jane.
Happy holidays, John, and I am so thrilled to be a regular guest. You know you guys are my favorite.
Oh, you say that to all the Wintrust Business Lunches.
I don't, but I'll tell you, I love Wintrust for supporting this because I love our conversation.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was talking to my colleague Bob Surratt here this morning, and he was talking about how so many Americans are unhappy with their jobs. It was something like 34% of us dread going to work each day. Did you see that reporting, and what do you think of that?
I did. You know, the first thought, and I'm sure you felt the same way, is aren't I lucky that I love what I do? But that's a terrible thing. We spend a lot of time talking about work-life balance, but I don't care how balanced you get. If you hate the time that you're working, you have to be really unhappy, and it has to bleed into all aspects of your life.
I speculated that part of that, and it's up 11 points from the last time they took the survey.
Yes.
I speculate that that is in part because people are working hybrid, because they're sitting in their kitchens or living rooms or bedrooms or dens, and they're looking at a Zoom screen still. And they love that they don't have to commute, but it's weighing on them. But they don't have human interaction.
Oh, I think that's so true, John. I mean, I think all of us really get a lot of our energy from working with other people and sharing ideas. And I think this Zoom fatigue, you know, another term that I keep hearing, is real. And you figure the things that you can do on Zoom are very rote. You do kind of the same thing all the time. You listen, you make one comment, you do whatever. Very different than if you were in an in-person meeting where you'd be laughing and joking and who's got the coffee and where are the Christmas cookies kind of thing. I think it's getting old, and I think it's coming at the same time that a lot of employers have been saving a lot of money on reducing their commercial real estate. So I don't know what the answer is going to be, because I don't think there are any longer enough places in many offices for people to come back to.
Oh, really? You think they've either sufficiently downsized or not renewed leases that if everybody did want to come back tomorrow, they wouldn't have the space for them?
I really feel that way. The workstations, I mean, I see so many companies across the country going to, you know, hoteling space. You know, in the old idea, not of WeWork, it's our own building, but you don't have your own desk anymore. And whoever comes in on Tuesday, you get their desk on Wednesday and somebody else gets it on Thursday when they come in. And I think it's a different dynamic. You know, I mean, you can't leave personal little mementos on your desk anymore. I think that's going to be the next wave of confusion for the workforce.
Mm. So if you are going to maybe try something different, there's a story at Fox Business today. Want a completely new industry? Here are critical career tips from experts. And I can tick some of these off. But if people are going to change jobs or even change industries, what are your thoughts for them?
You know, I saw that article, John. I thought it was really timely. First of all, figuring out what it is you like about what you're currently doing and how can you move into another job that has those aspects but maybe has fewer of the things you don't like. But the one thing that I think is really important if you're thinking about changing jobs is to remember that your current resume got you this job. And you're going to have to really revamp your resume to really call out for that new job. So highlight different skill sets, use different semantics, you know, maybe even change the format if you're going into, for instance, looking for a job with an employer that might like more creativity than your vanilla resume that looks like yours and mine probably, that is the same format that we used 10 years ago. And you want to go to somebody with a resume with a little more pizzazz because they're a more creative company.
If people are so isolated these days, I wonder what the good strategies are for networking. You know, you can be on LinkedIn, I guess, but really that's a portal. You know, that's a website. I wonder how you build relationships and get references.
Yeah, I think that's a growing challenge. I always like going to events. You know, there's so many free events that you can go to, whether it's run by government, you know, kinds of things, or whether you're going to a Chamber of Commerce meeting, or whether you're going to 4-H or, you know, a Rotary Club thing. It might be the cost of your lunch, but you get to go, you get to sit with people, you get to hear speakers about current trends in your labor market. I think those are great. And I love associations. You know, whether it's manufacturing, you know, the local manufacturing entity, whether it's the SHRM chapter where you can go and listen to HR directors. I really love those associations because it's, you know, it's really looking at not the big name recognizable employers, but oftentimes the small and mid-sized employers where you and I both know they're the people creating jobs. I mean, I don't care whether you looked at the ADP report today or whether you just use your common sense. The facts are clear. Small businesses continue to be, you know, the engine of our economy, and they are hiring people all the time. The largest businesses often have seasonal contractions.
What's the ADP report?
You know, that's ADP. Remember, they're a staffing agency, kind of thing, and they put out a jobs report every month, 3 days prior to the big report from the Department of Labor. And they tell you where the job growth has been in that last month. So today's report was about November, and it said there were 103,000 private sector jobs created. But, and you know, that number's good. It's not great, but it's good. but what and very close to what it was in October. I think October was 106,000. But what's concerning to me is that for the first time we saw since the recovery, we saw a drop in leisure and hospitality, which I don't like because that's a great sector for a lot of people to get their entry into the workforce. But also we saw a drop in manufacturing and construction. And, you know, we've talked about this in the past. I really feel like manufacturing jobs really create so much money for the community. You know, they support other businesses, as does construction. You know, we all see construction workers going into coffee shops and luncheonettes and things like that. That helps the economic vibrancy of a local community. I don't like when I see those numbers go down.
According to the Fed's Beige Book, the level of the number of skilled workers is below what it should be. What do we mean by skilled workers? Is that trade or is that engineering?
Well, I think it's both. So it runs the gamut in the world of engineering, from engineering techs all the way up to PhDs in engineering. So those would be called skilled workers. Although all the nurses and teachers in your audience just went, what about me? And I would say, yes, that's exactly right. I think to be a teacher or a nurse, you're a skilled worker too. But that's not how the Beige Book, which is from the Federal Reserve, counts it. But I think the interesting thing is people shouldn't get dissuaded by that. I think for 2024, it's still going to be really important to know what your skills are and to have documented skills. So by that, I mean a skill that you were assessed for and you have a proof in terms of a test score to say, this is I actually have these skills. Mm-hmm. You know, not like me walking out saying I have a skill and you just have to believe me, but having something that's, you know, industry recognized, employer recognized. So that don't give up on that. So that Beige Book thing, don't get thrown by that. The most important thing for the future is you be having documented skills and being able to articulate them.
What's your thought about this from WorkingNation.com? The survey of local businesses in the 12 key banking districts paints a picture of a job market that still favors the job seeker. Is that your view of it as well?
You know, I think, look, I love the Fed, and I think when they do data, the Beige Book and everything else, they do a really good job of understanding not only the nation, but those local communities. So I think, you know, look, if you looked at the JOLTS report, that's switching, that's a Department of Labor report that came out at the end of last month. It's the first time we've gone below 9,000 open jobs. We went to like 8,700 open jobs. And that tells you that the labor market is cooling a little bit. But I don't know what that means in terms of the future, because it's always a little slower this time of year. People mm-hmm. don't hire until the new year and things like that. And by the way, in 2023, the part-time employment is down. I mean, if you look at the Indeed numbers, they say it's down 6% over last year. So people don't have that part-time job, that seasonal job, you know, that Christmas shopping job to go to, which people think of too often as in stores, but it's also in warehouses. It's also customer service, you know, when you call in your order. Those jobs are down this year. That's not good. But I'm really hopeful, as you know, from all our time together, that these new federal projects that are out there, you know, the tech hubs, the Build Back Better money that's out there, the CHIP money that's out there, I think we're going to start to see those jobs. And they're good jobs, right? They're jobs that pay family-sustaining wages, I hope. You know, I think we're going to start to see them created in the first quarter of next year. And that's going to be good, especially for states like yours, John, where there's real manufacturing talent. People have done that, and they haven't been able to get back into high-paying manufacturing jobs. I think those are all coming back.
Let's hope so. You always are. And interesting, too. Jane Oates, president at WorkingNation.com. Okay, Jane. We'll talk again. Thank you.
John, have a lovely holiday, and to all your listeners.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago-based McDonald's is speeding up its expansion plans and plans to have 50,000 locations worldwide by 2027. The chain currently has about 41,000 stores, and it plans to open an additional 2,000 before this year is over. McDonald's says the new stores are only part of a multi-year growth strategy that includes a renewed focus on marketing, core menu offerings, delivery, mobile order, and kiosks. Part of the plan features an expansion of its Ready on Arrival service, in which online and mobile orders are assembled before customers get to a restaurant for pickup. That service is currently being tested in some locations, but will expand to McDonald's top six markets by 2025. Chicago is getting $95 million for improvements to Union Station. The federal funding will be used to renovate and expand the station's platforms. The goal is to expand capacity and get more trains into the station. The funding comes from the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. It's being awarded to Amtrak, which owns Union Station through a subsidiary. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food Time now. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And how many black women do you know who are in the wine business? I bet not many.
We equate to less than 1% of the entire industry.
Yeah, in fact, you could fit them all on a CTA bus. More from one of the few after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, your name, please?
Krishan Lampley, owner of Love Cork Screw.
Krishan is a wine négociant, which means trader in French.
Buying grapes and reselling it as your own, if you will, right? So I do custom crush blends.
How's that going?
Great, actually. Decade in, I am distributed around the country. I'm in large big box stores from Walmart to Target to Whole Foods, Mariano's. I'm carried in Binnie's, Total Wines and More, just to name a few.
Yeah, she doesn't own vineyards, but she buys from them in Michigan and California and Chile.
The best way to put it is I own tanker space, if you will, within each of the vineyards and create a custom crush blend. And they bottle it for me. And it shoots out to the distributors and makes it to the stores.
Krishan's wines have won awards for their taste and eyeballs for their creative labels.
I wanted the labels to be fun.
So she came up with label names that have a number of meanings.
We're moving on up. Yes, like the Jeffersons, we're moving on up is my Cabernet Sauvignon. That could be a new house, a new job.
Others?
So Head Over Heels is my Riesling. Good Times, Good Friends, that's my Pinot Grigio. We Go High is my Rosé, because when they go low, we go high. Touch the Sky is my Niagara. For the sweeter lover, Hard Knock Life. I always wanted to be Annie growing up. That's my Concord. That's the sweet red. In Too Deep is my Vino Blanco. Be the Light is my Sauvignon Blanc. And my new one is The Morning After, which is my Chardonnay.
Clever and funny.
A little fun, quirky, a little edgy, right? It's wine. The wine industry is meant to be so much fun. One of my phrases is enjoy it, drink it. Don't overthink it.
I like that motto. Congrats to Chicago's very own Krishan Lampley on being a unicorn, one of a handful of African-American women in the wine business.
My website, that's lovecorkscrew.com.
From the farm to your belly, it's National Gazpacho Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Rob Wojcik joins us now, the Vice President of Neighborhood Strategy for Choose Chicago. Hey, Rob, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, John.
This is the sales and marketing organization responsible for promoting Chicago on a global stage, right?
That is correct.
So is really your thrust, what you all do, not to get people to come in from the suburbs, but to get them to come in from other countries or states?
Well, it's really an and/or strategy, John. Making sure that we have both locals in the area, whether that's in the suburbs or the surrounding counties and states, but also making sure that folks on the national and international stage come to Chicago and appreciate all that we've got to offer. We also target our residents, making sure that folks explore other neighborhoods on other parts of the city and support the small businesses that really set our city apart.
You guys are working to promote a series of holiday activities and events around the city this month. Give me a couple of examples.
That's right. And this is an initiative that comes out of Mayor Johnson's office, as well as the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events, DCASE. We are blessed with some federal ARPA dollars to help support the recovery post-pandemic. And so we've partnered with 10 different communities to support activations and events across them. And so this weekend, I know I'll be out in Humboldt Park for the Puerto Rican steel flag lighting in partnership there with the Puerto Rican Cultural Center, one of our great partners. And then later this weekend, they'll be shopping in Bronzeville. There'll be a barber jazz show in Lawndale. But other things like Three Kings Day later next month, and rooftop events in Westridge as well. And if folks want more information about any of those events and other happenings around the city, they can just check out neighborhoodholidays.com for all of those events and some shopping guides as well.
You want to pick on one that's kind of unique or different, maybe a neighborhood or an event I hadn't thought about before?
For sure. And so this weekend also is the Posada in Little Village. And so this is a great opportunity to come and see not just your traditional Christmas celebration and nativity scene, but really one that's rooted in Mexican culture and is also a great give back to the community and toy drive for the kids.
Give me that website again. So I'm going to explore Chicago's neighborhoods and find some holiday things to do. Where do I go?
So it's super easy. It's just neighborhoodholidays.com.
Neighborhoodholidays.com. Really good idea. Really good idea. Rob, thanks for your time. Our best to everybody.
Thanks for having me, John. Have a great holiday.
You bet. Rob Wojcik is the Vice President of Neighborhood Strategy at ChooseChicago.com.